Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Food Fridays on The Leonard Lopate Show.
On our mini-series about dinner parties during this season of Food Fridays, we've talked about budgeting, about opening our homes to refugees, about cooking elaborate meals for a crowd, and we've also heard from you, our listeners, and many of those calls were about food and etiquette. So we thought, why not have two of our favorite guests join forces for our last dinner party segment? I'm very pleased that Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the New York Times Sunday Style section, was able to join us now, along with Melissa Clark, a staff reporter for the New York Times Wednesday Food section, where she writes the popular column, A Good Appetite. It's the first time that we've had these two favorites of ours on together, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show.
Thank you. We like to be known as salt and pepper professionally when you're you're doing
this. I'm salt. I'm so salt.
I know you could be spelling
I guess I'll be pepper.
Are you spelling pepper, P-E-P-P-A?
I certainly am.
We also want to hear from our listeners. If you have any last-minute dinner party questions that you want answered, we are here for you. So give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. To start out, I was thinking maybe we can flip the script a bit and see if either of you had a dinner party-related question for the other. Philip, you have any questions for Melissa?
Oh, you know, that is a good... I do, as a matter of fact. Because
I'm so pleased.
I'm so anxious about being judged, about how it's going to come out, about is it going to work okay, that I have the smallest repertoire of dinner party foods. I only make what I know I can do perfectly. So
that take some of the fun out of it?
Well, I don't know that I'd characterize any part of it as fun, which is what we will get to, but what's a good source for expanding my horizons subtly? I don't want anything dramatic.
Well, I this is what I do a lot when I think about what someone should make for dinner. You know, whether it's a dinner party or whether it's a weeknight thing, I think about being comfortable in the technique. You know, like what's your dinner party go-to? Like, what's your thing that you do?
Roast chicken.
Okay, perfect. So, okay, well, as a matter of fact, I happen to have given you guys a roast chicken recipe for your website because, yes, roast chicken is something you're comfortable with.
Totally.
But you make it the same way every time?
I cook the hell out of that roast chicken like an angel.
That's perfect. That's completely fine. But maybe you want to just change. All you have to do is, like I always say, keep the same ingredient and just change its outfit. Change up what you serve it with. So in my recipe, it's a roast chicken, but it also has spiced chickpeas that you roast it on. So the chickpeas have a ton of spices. They absorb the chicken fat. I mean, chicken fat roasted chickpeas, that is not a bad thing. And then it has smoked paprika. So it has, you know, the smoked paprika gives it a very different personality. The chickpeas make it really texturally interesting. This is a dish you've made before.
Right.
Because you've made roast chicken, but you're doing it in a way that's new and exciting, and then you don't have to be freaked out
and
scared.
And my terror level, stays reasonable.
So I say that for people.
Code
yellow. Stay in the thing that you're comfortable with ingredient-wise and change up the flavors.
Should he try it out first? Just himself and friends before he does a dinner party?
It depends on your personality. I mean, I certainly don't think you need to, but I'm sure you'll be fine. But
I always do it.
What's the worst thing that'll happen if it doesn't come out perfectly? How bad?
Well, thank you.
You order pizza, right?
She should become a cognitive therapist.
There's nothing bad that. No, well, here's a question for you. So say that I mess up a dinner or someone messes up a dinner and it doesn't come out. So then is it unacceptable to order in pizza or order in Chinese? Or is that perfectly fine etiquette-wise?
I think it's perfectly fine. You've got part of the thing that I know from my own experience is that I'm over-dramatized the thing so much that the stakes for the mistake are way too high. Everybody's roasted a chicken and you've left it in the oven just way too long and you burn it. So, yeah, great. Or maybe you've stocked up maybe you've got great cheese or order in pizza, fine, terrific. I think when mistakes happen are when your guests are really doing the bonding you hope that they're going to do at a dinner party anyway, because we've all done it.
So you just answered your own question. So you don't have to make it before, because nothing bad will happen if it doesn't come out. In fact, good things can happen. There'll be bonding.
Now, Melissa, do you have any etiquette questions for
Philip? That was one. So is that okay, you know, to if you mess it up, is it okay to have everybody over and say, oops, this didn't work out. We ordered in Chinese, you know.
Yeah. Anybody like really burn chicken?
I'd have another etiquette question, though. Can I ask this one? Because this is something that, so I have this dinner party in mind. Now, our house is very narrow. It's very small. Our dining room is awkward. And we need to have a sit-down party. It can't be a stand-up party because of the people we're inviting. Our table seats 8 people comfortably, 10 people if you really squished up. We need to have 10 people to balance it all out. Is it okay to invite people and squish them in like sardines? Or is that going to be uncomfortable and everyone's going to be miserable?
You see, I went, of course, immediately to another problem, which is 10 people is a lot of people to cook for.
Oh, that's not a problem for me.
Okay.
That's easy.
So, yeah, so I've got to just get past my problem, which is like cooking for 10. But I think if, you know, what I do a lot of is make things, and it can't be buffet. They can't sit in the living room while they're eating. It's too messy, and you like people at your table.
I think that there's something really important about sitting around the same table for, if you want the group to talk to each other. Otherwise, I feel that people, and you can tell me if your experience is different, everyone gets into these little clumps, and they talk to the people they know. And in order to really get people talking to each other, you need them around the same table.
Well, let me throw in a couple of questions to complicate situations. Some people insist on inviting an odd number of people so that you don't wind up with total clumps. And then some hosts like to assign seats, also mix up seating, even keep couples separate to encourage conversations. Of course, I've been in that situation, and that can sometimes lead to the situation where the person to my right ignores me and only speaks with the person to her right.
Right.
How do we handle seating?
Well, I think you two are both, let's just call a spade, you two are both foodies. So I think what goes wrong most of the time at dinner parties.
You know my name means spade in Russian.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, shovel, spade.
Good. So we really are calling a spade. We are going, I think that when I give dinner parties, I spend so much time thinking about the food that I don't often, or I skimp on the issues that are really important, like who should be sitting where. I love to tell people where to sit. Mm. I love to concoct the guest list, like Melissa was just talking about, like coming up with the right 10 people or the right 8 people, or in my case, I like 6, because 6 people can still have one conversation, and I can think about where to put people. It's comfy.
I like 6 to 8.
I tell people where to sit. Do you tell people where to sit, Melissa?
Not usually, but for the 10 people fantasy party in my head, yes, I will, because I have some goals.
Is Joni Mitchell coming to this party?
No, but that would be great. Yeah. She could be 11.
she'd be at the top of my dream list of the dream dinner party. What do you assign seats, Leonard?
No.
You don't?
No.
You think it's too formal that way?
I just want people to be as relaxed as
possible.
Well,
you don't find couples sitting together then?
Well, if they sit together, and usually when I'm inviting people to a dinner, they know each other anyway, so it doesn't really matter whether they're sitting next to each other or not, because they're also interested in the person across the table. Yeah. There are issues that can develop. Sometimes topics come up that we don't want to come up.
And
or sometimes somebody dominates the conversation, starts telling us a lot more about his or her personal life than we need to know.
And sometimes shy people, I'm very careful with shy people to put them in places where they can bloom and not feel overwhelmed. No. That's a situation where I might sit a shy person next to a spouse or a partner. But I think those kind of the logistics of where people are sitting, who's going to come when, where we do this part, where we do that part, those are such important ingredients for having a good dinner party. And I think a lot of us are so freaked out about burning the chicken that we don't really think about those things.
So do you actually put name plates in front of them?
Well, with 6 people, it's not necessary, really. You can just say, you know, how would you feel, Jennifer, there next to Melissa, and Melissa's husband goes over there next to her. And, that's how I do it.
We have a lot of people calling in. I have tons of questions, but I think that we should get the audience involved here. John from Paramus, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, two of my favorite guests, too. If a guest brings a bottle of wine that doesn't necessarily go with the meal that you've made, or it's not a really great bottle of wine, is it mandatory that you open that bottle of wine and serve it? And if not, how do you get out of it? Because my wife insists, even though there's bottles of wine open on the table, she insists that I do this.
That's the weirdest. Your wife, that seems so strange. Melissa and I were both violently shaking our heads. No, you don't need to open that wine. You've choreographed a meal, and that's your prerogative as the host and hostess.
But if you open more than one bottle of wine and you just leave that one there and the person who brought it wants a drink from it, isn't that all right?
Oh, it's certainly okay. I mean, if it works, and or even, I mean, if the person demands it be opened, it's really not that much, and wants to consume it, it's really not that much of a gift.
More of a concern to me is if they bring a really great bottle of wine, and I don't want to waste it on all of these people.
I think the point there, he said, is if it's not a great bottle and he doesn't want to serve it. I think if it's not a great bottle, that's when you do serve it, because if he brought it, that means he probably likes it, and then get rid of it with everybody else at the tip, so you're not left with. But I think that if you've put thought into your wine and food pairings, that actually has to take priority, because you've really planned it. And I don't think that any guest, you know, if they're coming to your house, they should be very grateful that you're cooking for them and you've put all this thought into it. I don't think they'll be insulted if you say, thank you so much for this lovely gift. I'm going to enjoy it on another night.
Let's take another call. Greg from Newark. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question that's a little different than what you're discussing, and I have an 11-year-old daughter, and I'm interested in teaching her more about table etiquette, and I was wondering if any of your guests knew of any books or resources that I could take advantage of.
Is she a sloppy eater?
Sometimes, yes.
There's a great book that is out, and it's really fancy, and you've got to have her read it. You've got to teach her to read it with tongue-in-cheek. It's called Tiffany's Table Manners for Teens. They really went long with the T alliteration. And it's very it's stuff that you – I mean, she can go to any embassy on the globe, and she would be able to eat a dinner – she'd be able to eat dinner properly.
And what about
Do you,
have
you, one
Melissa?
You like, Melissa?
You, well, Melissa, you have – kids.
I have an 8-year-old. Yeah, you know, we are right now working really hard to get her to use utensils because, you know, and she's 8. Yes, so when she was little, I learned from Alice Waters. I read this Alice Waters book and she said, oh, you know, the best way to experience salad is to eat salad with your hands. And so we do that in our house. It's just, but now that she's 8 and she's going to other people's houses for dinner, I'm like, okay, you know, when you eat salad at other people's houses, you need to use a fork. So this is where we're at. We're so behind going to an embassy. Just like, use a fork for your salad in public.
My guests are Melissa Clark. Well, there are two columnists for the New York Times. Melissa Clark, who writes A Good Appetite for the Times on Wednesdays in its food section, and Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the Times in its Sunday Style section, and also gets together with a few people, but that's not really a dinner party, for another column series that you do.
There is food, and it's funny.
But you're going to a restaurant with people.
But the etiquette do both of the people know? I mean, for instance, on this Sunday coming up, we've got one with Sheryl Sandberg and from Facebook, and Elizabeth Alexander, the Barack Obama's first poet laureate, a really brilliant writer. And we met for breakfast. And the first question everyone asks me is, are we really eating or are we fake eating? Mm. And I think that when I can get them to really eat, that's when the conversation really starts. It's a column ploy, but when they really get eating, people really start sharing stuff that's important when you start eating food.
That's really funny because that never comes up when you go out with any food writers in the food. There's never a question, are you really eating? Yeah. The answer is always yes.
Of course.
But the thing is, their pictures are being taken, so that adds a level of awkwardness. You don't want like escarole in your teeth.
Yeah, but the photo editor's not going to pick the picture with the escarole in your teeth.
We're going to take a little break, and a reminder that we have a couple of recipes from Melissa on our show page, Turkish lamb chops with sumac, tahini, and dill, and Philip, roasted chicken with crispy smoked paprika, chickpeas, roasted lemon, and baby kale. We'll be back with more. Our number here, 212-433-9692. We're back with the last in our series on dinner parties with Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the New York Times Sunday Style section, and Melissa Clark, whose column, A Good Appetite, appears in the Times Wednesday food section. And we're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at WMIC.org, on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Now, we've talked about dinner parties in the past with other cooks and people who've written cookbooks. One thing they often preach to home cooks is mise en place, everything in its place before starting to cook. Does that strategy work prepping a dinner party?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, that is probably your biggest aid in a dinner party is, you know, more so even than planning where you're going to seat people or, you know, worrying about wine pairings. The most important thing is figuring out, you know, where everything goes. So you have, you know, if you're cooking something a la minute, meaning you're cooking right before people come, you have all your mise en place done, you have everything chopped, your ingredients in separate bowls, everything next to the stove. That is the most important thing because you can be cooking when people come, but if you're also trying to be chopping and slicing, then that's a disaster.
And also being the perfect host.
And of course, right, being the perfect host.
And so what do you do? What's your plan when guests arrive? Do you give them a task to make? Do you make them a drink? Do you have snacks that are out and let them cut some cheese and put it on little baguettes?
I don't give them tasks, but I try to take the time to, and this is, I've noticed a serious uptick, because I think I'm maybe less like you, Leonard, in that I generally have parties where people don't all know each other. So I am their sort of guide to whom I think they should know and why I think what they have in common. Or here's a person I think you'd really love, Leonard, and bring you over to Melissa and say you're both terrific chefs or something like that. So I try to play that role like a massive Harvey Weinstein, Scott Rudin kind of producer. Flo Ziegfeld.
Well, this grows out of your profession, whereas I just want to be together with friends.
Yeah.
I actually put everybody to work. I think that is something. When people come into my house for dinner, we always have, you know, snacks and hors d'oeuvres out in the kitchen on this big counter that we have, and we have our cocktails there too. So my husband will offer people wine and cocktails, and there'll be snacks, and I put people to work, especially the shy people, especially the people I don't know that well. Because
you say, Mary, can you come and help me
exactly
with this thing?
Exactly. And we're all there together because it's a big kitchen, and so it helps conversations start to flow. If people don't know each other, I put people who don't know each other together. Can you guys, you know, instead of letting them put the cheese on the baguette themselves, I'm like, can you guys cut the cheese and butter the bread and put it, you know, make these little canapes for me. Wow. And I do that purposely. And I really think that it helps people get to know each other.
And that's, do you like it when the meal is kind of winding down and there's always somebody who starts gathering plates unasked?
Yeah, that really bums me out.
Yeah, I don't like that. Actually, I have my system. The cleanup system's a whole other thing.
But I'm not shy anymore about saying, Melissa, please sit down. We're not going to do that right now. And even when they say, no, I really want to help. And I'll say, well, then you can help later. And because I know when things are petering out. But if they're not petered out, I want people to feel comfortable staying.
And then there's the other side, when somebody insists on staying when you, at this point, where you hope that they leave. But what about the arrivals? There are many people who say, I don't want to be the first person to arrive. So there are some who show up a little before arrival time, which usually annoys me just a bit. Then there's some who show up exactly on time. But there are also those people I know who are almost guaranteed to show up a half hour late.
Half hour seems stretching it a bit. I'm a 15-minute man myself. How about you, Melissa?
Thank you. Okay, see, I say that on time for a dinner party is 15 minutes after the call time. In fact, the other day, my husband and I got to a dinner party on time, and I made us stand outside for 7 minutes. I was like, you can't get there on time. They need a couple of minutes. I mean, and maybe that's just
right.
But right?
It's totally right.
15 minutes after the called for time is the proper time to get there, 10 to 15
and
minutes.
And if somebody's at the call time plus 45 minutes, I will by then have called their cell. And if there's not a response, I'll just start. I mean, I think there's a limit on how long I want to prolong the cocktail part because
people get trashed.
How long between the time when you've invited people and the time that you say, let's sit down and have dinner?
I like a long cocktail time, but I have a ton of food with it. So that way people are eating and drinking at the same time. They're not just drinking. My philosophy is by the time you sit down at the table, if you're still hungry, I have done something wrong. I like to really, I love the hors d'oeuvres. I love having a lot of nibbles. And then the food at the table should be, so tempting that you can eat just a little bit more.
Yeah. Now, the big problem with your plan, Philip, is there are so many people with dietary restrictions today, gluten-free, allergies, lactose intolerant, vegetarian, pescatarian, vegan, kosher, halal. Take that into consideration.
I've started asking mostly because of one really unfortunate event that happened where the person got very dramatic, but she hadn't told me in advance about the gluten allergy, and I'd made a pasta. There was also a gorgeous salad and that she could have eaten, but I ask now. And then given my limited repertoire, it's not so hard to come up with something. The question that I get at Social Cues all the time is, should I tell them when I'm being invited? And I think, well, of course you should tell them. But you should also make sure to let them know that you're really an expert at, you're really an expert at putting together all the delicious stuff that you can eat that he or she
can. Could you bring your own food?
I think that's a bit extreme, but there are people who have so many allergies that makes them feel more comfortable. But I think it inevitably, if I were the host, that would make me feel kind of bad.
It's a question that comes up a lot. People always ask me, do I have to ask people that I'm cooking for myself and I'm having people over? Do I have to take in their dietary restrictions? And they get annoyed about it. And the answer is yes, of course you do. You're inviting – your hospitality is the number one reason. You're inviting people over because you want to feed them.
What happens, Melissa, when people invite you to their dinner party? Are they ever intimidated?
Yeah, they are. They get nervous. Hey, I can't believe I'm cooking for you. And I wish they wouldn't. I'm just so happy. I love it when people invite me over. I love not having to cook. I also love stealing other people's recipes. So, I need inspiration.
So it's win-win.
Yeah, it's completely win-win. And I do the dishes, and I'm a very good guest. I bring great wine that you don't have to open right away if you don't want to. No, I love being invited over. I think that, just as general advice for people, if you're having people over, it doesn't, the food is part of it, of course, but it's not the whole thing. People are so honored when you invite them into their home. It's really a special thing to do. So don't get too hung up on the food.
I'm speaking with Melissa Clark and Philip Galanis, both columnists for The New York Times, among other things. We are talking about dinner parties and dinner food and etiquette. And Josie asks, what happens when you're trapped at a table next to someone and you don't like that person? How do you deal with it?
Well, I mean, you, Josie, you certainly must have, you must lead a charmed life if you never have to sit next to someone that you're not wild about. You get through it just like you get through everything else in the world with coworkers who are vaguely annoying or bosses who are too demanding. You just find a way to make pleasant conversation with them, spend a little time with the person on the other side, but you pull up your big girl pants and you get on with it, Josie.
I forgot whether I gave a station ID. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, right?
You did that.
Okay. Well, I just did it again. Laura from Mandheim, where is it?
Mandum.
Mandum, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call today. My question is this. I do not drink alcohol at all anymore, and my husband is only a beer drinker. And so if we have people over, people bring wine, and of course my husband will go get wine, but neither of us have any idea what we're doing with that. And then other people bring wine, and I'm not quite sure
you know, which bottle to open? You know, is there a suggestion of like a general kind of wine you can serve that everybody would like? I mean, I really don't know anything about that.
There are some basic rules of when you use white, when you use red, and when you might bring in rosé, but shouldn't they? She just consult the guest. Which would you like to have with this?
Yeah,
meal?
I think that, especially if someone's bringing wine, just ask them. And people who bring wine generally like to drink wine, and they'll have opinions. And I think it's perfectly fine just to let your guests steer that.
Should we also assume that somebody's going to want beer?
If you want to offer it, if you think it works, sure. You've got it.
I mean, my brother would go to the fanciest restaurant in the world and order beer.
I think, well, good for him, and I hope they brought it to him.
Oh, they will bring it to him. Probably make a face in the kitchen, but they bring it to him.
Yeah, and for people, when your husband's going out to buy wine in preparation for your dinner, the men and women at my local wine shop are really great at making suggestions inside my price range for what might be really great with something that I'm thinking of making.
We're having roast chicken. What goes well with roast chicken? Okay, well, let's take another call. This one's from Jono from West Village. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Get on with it, Josie, is my new call cry. Thank you for that. So not even a question, just a statement. Can we all declare that a host or hostess that makes you take off your shoes just should not be hosting a dinner party? Part of my look is my shoes, and quite frankly, there's something, it's not a slumber party, it's a dinner party. So the socks and the casual nature, what are your thoughts on that?
And then you have to worry about whether you have a hole in that sock.
Yeah.
Not to mention a pedicure. Is your pet? I get so nervous about that. How is my pedicure?
I think it's a quartet of agreement here, Jono. We'll all get angry emails from people who are trying to keep hypoallergenic homes, but I say that they're your guests and they should feel free to leave their shoes on.
However, if they want to take their shoes off, I think that's fine too. I really do think your job as a host is to make your guests comfortable.
Okay, thank you for calling. And our next caller is calling long distance from Prague. Hi, Sophie.
Oh, my gosh.
You listen to us on your phone?
Yes, I'm here. I'm amazed that you took me.
Of course.
I love your show, and I've just moved to Prague, having a great time. The food scene is really impressive. But the reason I'm
beyond
calling,
goulash, what do you eat? Oh no, that's Hungary. That's Budapest.
Right. No, but you do have, they have knedlicki. There's a lot of gluten stuff. I'm calling about gluten free and how I approach, because I just found out that I have celiac. And so what I do is I definitely tell people who invite me to dinner parties that I now have to eat gluten-free. And that's particularly hard here in Prague because there's a lot of gluten in the foods here. But I also, the part that's hardest in a dinner party is the bread and the crackers. So what I do is I bring my own crackers. But, you know, and invariably you can avoid gluten by not eating, if there's pasta or something like that. And I'll just do the salads and the protein. But I always find, I'll say, do you mind I can just bring my own box of crackers? And that's how I deal with the, because that's the really the most difficult part is the bread and the crackers if you have dips and so on.
I think that sounds perfectly reasonable.
Thank you so much for calling.
Good approach.
And also, these days, so many people I know have gluten intolerances. Yeah. And so I actually found a really good brand of gluten-free crackers that I love. They're made with oat flour, and I just keep them on hand. I just have them in my house.
Yeah.
Going to slip another call in here. This one is from Lois from the Upper East Side. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I'm having a dispute with my friend. If you're invited to a party, is it mandatory to bring wine or a gift, or can
flowers
you
or something?
But yourself.
Yeah, I think it's whatever you want to do. There's no entry charge, and so I think a lot of us are so grateful that somebody is going to the trouble of cooking that we want to bring some kind of token. But not every time, especially with close friends, where you and she or he are seeing each other every couple of weeks for dinner. I don't think it's necessary to feel obliged to bring a nasty scented candle every time you go to somebody's house.
I would say never bring a nasty scented candle. You know what I like to bring? I like to bring people breakfast for the next day. That's my little thing. You know, like you pick up, you know, some lovely pastries or something, or you get some jams and some coffee. I think that's
That's terrific.
I want to return, since we come to the end of this, to a question I brought up earlier. How do you signal when the evening is over and it's time for people to go home? Do you start yawning? What do you do?
Well, I usually say, and now you have to be reasonable because part of the bargain is people are coming into your home. So that means that you're not going to have 100% control. So let's say you'd like them to have left by 10:30. And I'm thinking, okay, I'd like them to have left by 10:30, but now it's 11. And at 11, I think I can say, thank you so much for having come. It really meant the world to us. And we really have to work on getting together soon. And if they're really that thick that they haven't stood up at that point.
Well, they may be drunk also.
Then you say, did you have a coat? Or
that's a good one, especially in the summer. That works really well in July.
Exactly.
Happened to us pretty recently. We had a dinner party and it was great fun. And people stayed really late. And at one point, you know, after I had cleaned up the entire kitchen, I had cleaned up every, you know, usually cleaning up is the signal. Mm. No, everybody just.
They were having fun.
They were. And I was too. But it was really late and I was exhausted. And I finally said, I'm so sorry. I have to go to bed. Yeah. And, you know, I love this party, but out of here, people. And it was fine.
And what about if somebody is drunk too much?
Well, that's something that I'm really careful about because because so many bad things happen. I mean, driving, not just the transport home, but also just in their interactions with other people there, that I'm not at all shy when I see people, when I'm clocking somebody who's drinking too much, just saying, you know, Mark, could you help me in the kitchen? And then say, you know, I'm noticing that you could slow down on the drinking. And I feel fine about that. And generally, if there's a minute of embarrassment, it's a minute of embarrassment and a hug on the way out is usually enough to clear it all up.
My great thanks to both of you for being on our show, this time together.
Yes.
This was great.
We should do this more often. Next time with food.
We'll have a dinner party.
Philip Galanis writes the Social Cues column for the New York Times Sunday Style section. And Melissa Clark writes the A Good Appetite column for the New York Times Wednesday food section. We've been talking about dinner parties, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Leonard.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
This was fun.